Welcome to The Burnout Show, a weekly conversation with special guests who generously share their burnout stories with us. We also chat with health and wellness experts on how to best navigate burnout when you're in the thick of it, as well as how to avoid it returning. And now here's your host, Jess Jones.
Thanks for coming back to The Burnout Show. Before we get into today's chat with Alicia Ed, I just wanted to check in and see how you are feeling. If you're looking for some extra support with managing or avoiding burnout right now, the Breaking Up with Burnout mini course is available. You'll get access to 3 modules that cover life, work, and burnout, which you can move through at your own pace. Head to the link in our show notes to find out more, or go to theburnoutclub.com/breakingupwithburnout. Now here's my chat with Alicia. Hello and welcome to another episode of The Burnout Show. Today's very special guest is Alicia Ed. Alicia, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Can you share a little bit about what you do, please?
Yeah, sure. So I am an advanced sports dietitian, but I usually refer to myself as a performance dietitian for the main reason that it kind of allows people to understand a bit more about what I do, and that it's not necessarily about athlete performance, it's about human performance. And so whenever I work with corporates, everyday active, they're like, oh, you're a sports dietitian. Like, I'm definitely not athlete enough. But then when we think about what performance means, it's like, oh, everyone actually wants to perform and be their best self. And so that's where a performance dietitian can come in to support the nutrition element of that.
Right. Yeah. It sounds very exciting and I'd imagine quite demanding work as well.
Yeah, it's a lot. I've actually just come out of working with our Olympians. So it was a very, very busy few months, actually.
Yeah,
and not just in the athlete side, but also in the management of the staffing as well. And, you know, it's a really intense environment. Sports, extremely demanding. The hours aren't conducive to a 9-to-5 or a Monday to Friday, for that matter. And the role definitely has its elevations and declines throughout the seasons. And so we kind of have to navigate time, but it's a lot and really rewarding when you actually influence behavior and performance and achievement, but it can be a lot behind the scenes and almost invisible a lot of the time.
Yeah, I bet. Were you actually over there with the Olympians, or was this all done virtually?
No, this was all done virtually. The changes that were made to the Olympics and also the licenses meant that we were only able to travel with quite a small team. So I work with the Matildas, the Australian football team, as our main squad, and also some Paralympic athletes as well. And so with the small number, it meant that we had to prioritise like the coaching staff, and then I came in virtually, which comes with its own challenges, particularly absolutely. Because, like their first couple of months they were in camp and it was in Sweden. So my days kind of started at 4 p.m. when they woke up, and they went late. So it was demanding in that way. I remember being at home before lockdown and I was with my parents and they were like, are you, what is this? Like, are you always like this? And I'd be on the phone at 10, 11, 12, just trying to get stuff done. And that was a really challenging time, and also trying to, you know, keep up with the being within the team as well. Being virtual comes with its own challenges in terms of influence and impact, environment and culture, which I think many of us are probably living through in terms of all working virtually at the moment as well. So,
How did you look after yourself at that time when you were doing such crazy hours? I'd imagine you'd have a schedule ahead of time. So did you have to manage your sleep differently, your diet differently, just to cope with that?
Yeah, it's really challenging. I'm a mum of 3 kids as well. So I've got a 6-year-old, a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old, well, nearly 4-year-old. And that's hard, right? When your days are starting, when their days are finishing, you can't necessarily drop everything in terms of the sleep, feed, chaos time of parenthood. I think every parent will know that any time after 5 is a little bit of a nightmare. And so that was really tough. I had to apologize a lot to my kiddies during that time. I did not feel my best self in terms of, you know, that balance that we all talk about is a non-existent thing. But yeah, that was really challenging. I don't feel like I did everything well then, but I always do try and envisage how I juggle the balls in the air and which balls are plastic and which balls are glass. And that is definitely something in my mind all the time, of just going, okay, which ones are glass today, this week, forever almost, and which ones can I drop right now? And so I did drop some plastic balls, or I handed them on. But also I think one of the big things, particularly in tech startup land, so we're half servicing dietitians and half tech startup, and together we compete, is one of the things I've learned and one of the reflections that I often get from, say, tech startups who do tend to work extremely long hours, intense, fast-paced kind of practice. One thing that I felt really fortunate with was one of the glass balls for me personally was always my nutrition. And that, of course, doesn't surprise people, but it's also one thing that I really thank myself for often, where no matter how busy the days are, I've got the capability, but also the resilience and knowledge. And I know that's a really big privilege, right? So my privilege is in my knowledge, but also in my ability to change and adapt my food depending on what adversity I've got. And so that's always something that I recognize isn't going to be everyone's glass ball. And so when I'm working with people, I do think that, you know, often I'm working with a plastic crumpled ball that I need to lift back up, and that's okay. But yeah, for us and as a family, that glass ball definitely, I feel, does impact and influence our ability to cope a lot when it comes to those really long hours, busy, stressed times. And, you know, there's no doubting at the moment, I feel like now is probably harder. I feel like there's so many more balls in the air. I feel like the teetering between coping and crisis is always there. But yeah, it's a really, really challenging piece to know what kind of things are going to feed your self-care and your ability to cope, and what kind of things that we need to let go of or pass on for others as well. And that's something I'm still learning.
Yeah, I think we all are and have to relearn after, you know, the pandemic as well, because things have changed so much and we've all needed to adapt and adjust accordingly.
Like even yesterday, I was meant to do a podcast recording last night, because we have our own podcast on nutrition, performance nutrition, and I was going to do a podcast recording on nutrition for the menstrual cycle. It had been something that people had requested, and I was like, yes, I'm going to do it. I'm going to answer your questions. And I went on Instagram yesterday and was like, I'm not doing it. I can't do it justice. I'm not in the best place. I need to drop one of these balls right now to allow me to get through the week. And this response was amazing. Like, I didn't expect a response. Right. I was like, I'm sorry, I'm not going to get to it. And I just thought I'd tell people, because I had told people that on Thursday night, lock it in. And the response was, thank you. Like, this is the first time I've actually seen someone admit that they'd let something go or delayed something or took something off their plate for the sake of themselves. And I was like, oh, okay, I'm going to tell you this all the time now, because I do this all the time. And it was like, please don't apologize. They were like, don't apologize. It was so nice to see. So I think the more we can talk about it and the more we can go, you know what, I'm only human. And at the moment, I am literally being expected to do so much more than ever should be expected of anyone, because we're homeschooling, we're working, we're running business, we're trying to support a virtual culture of our team as well. Like, it's a lot.
And take care of yourself as well.
Oh, yeah, that thing. Oh, yeah.
You know that? Yeah. That thing at the bottom of the list.
Yeah.
No, it's so much. Yeah, it's huge at the moment. And I know it's different all over the world, but here in, I'm in Victoria and you're in New South Wales, and we're both in lockdown at the moment, and it doesn't feel like it's ending anytime soon, but I'm sure it will. And it is extra tough. And I think it has been even harder this year for people to manage. You know, I think a lot of events and things people had in the calendars last year were rescheduled to this year, and there was light at the end of the tunnel and there was hope and things to look forward to, and then it's kind of all been taken away again. But we'll get there eventually. So what led you to this type of work, Alicia?
Oh, I think I kind of fell into it, to be honest. I knew I always wanted to be part of health. Like, I always had that nature where I just wanted to impact others, and health seemed to be where that, you know, empathetic kind of individual kind of fell. And so I, over the course of thinking about my career, I think I had physio, occupational therapy, and nutrition. And I just happened to fall into nutrition because I wasn't the sharpest tool. I missed out on those top two that were very high. And I'm so grateful I did. I don't think I ever realized, and even when we set out with Compete, which was a few years ago now, I don't think we ever realized the power of nutrition beyond the science as much as we do now. You know, we knew that nutrition could influence performance. We knew it could impact so much more around the human and the ability to show up and keep going. Yeah. But it wasn't until we started playing that we realized that I'd kind of fallen into, and our team then fell into more around that behavioral piece of nutrition, but also the power it had and the central nature it had to our overall well-being and the core to human performance. Because if we think around nutrition and what we feed ourselves and how we feel, it is a bit of a lag measure, right? So if we think around what our food is like in times of stress or in times of celebration, or if we think about what our food is like in times of uncertainty, you know, I think so often we notice or we aim for finite measures when it comes to food. We might be aiming for weight loss or cutting out sugar or all these types of things that are, I guess, measurable. But in reality, are we missing the bigger point of actually what we can impact and what we can achieve with food and nutrition? And that's where our path has really led to that infinite side of how nutrition can form and actually create a really cool pathway to who someone wants to be, not what they want to achieve. And that's a really big thing we work with a lot. And it's often actually where a lot of the discussions around how people are feeling and coping come into it, because I don't think anyone would fall off their chair when I say, oh, you know, veggies are important, we should all eat veggies. That's not new information. It's not new, this like, whoa, I didn't think about that. Yeah. Or, you know, the biggest piece is not my knowledge. It's actually my ability to translate it to someone so it fits into their environment, where they're currently at, literally in environment and also mind capability, capacity to cope with any change.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You've obviously always had that compassionate and empathetic nature and wanting to care for others. Did you have something else that you dreamed about being when you were growing up?
Yeah, a vet.
A vet? Yeah.
I did a poll. I did a poll on every dietitian I talked to, it seemed to be this really common theme. So I was like, I'm going to do a poll on Instagram. And it was like 70% of dietitians. What? I wanted to be a vet growing up, and it must be that empath kind of animal love. Yeah, then turns into very pathway. Weird.
Yeah,
super weird. So I went to my uncle's, who was a vet at the time, to have a day of just seeing if that's what I wanted to do. I think I was in year 10 or something.
Yeah,
and there was one de-sexing of a cat, and I was like, that is gruesome. I cannot deal. I was like, I feel queasy. And from that moment, I was like, I need something that doesn't involve blood or knives. Well, knives and cooking, maybe.
That'd be a quick way to get you out of there.
Exactly.
So what does self-care look like to you?
Oh, I think it's not what people think first thing. I really do feel like the Instagrammable nature of Instagram has delivered us a self-care that's not actually real or achievable and really out of touch with who people actually are and what they can achieve. I always laugh when people are like, oh, Alicia, just, you know, get up and have a really good morning routine of like meditation and then go out for a workout. I was like, the other day I was up at 5:30 and I had all three kids awake wanting to color in. I'm like, when am I going to do this meditation? You know, oh, Alicia, what you need to do is, you know, get into it. These are actual recommendations. And you need to have a long magnesium bath. And I'm like, When? Have you seen me shower? I've got three kids underneath me,
toys everywhere.
And it was actually a year ago. Pretty much a year ago, where I was just struggling. My youngest was only one, and I'd really struggled to find purpose or energy. I found myself being really impatient with the kids and just not present. And to me, a lack of presence personally is a real sign that I'm starting to teeter from coping into that struggling crisis mode. And I feel like it then leads to me not being playful, you know, not being patient. And, you know, that irritability and disengagement is something that I always feel personally is a warning sign. And it's something I always reflect upon with others as well. How are you feeling, you know, in the workplace, in the home? you know, what are those feelings and emotions? And for me, they're the ones that really stand out. And my hubby was amazing. He's like, it's because you have literally no time for you and you need something that is defined and helping you. And it was, yeah, from that moment, I, you know, found a gym that was everything to me in terms of being now part of who I was, but also was a thing that filled my cup and allowed me to be that person I wanted to be. I wonder how often, you know, we do set out with those finite goals that I've mentioned of, you know, I want to lose weight or I want to do this, but they're in the hope of achieving something greater that we haven't necessarily worked through yet.
Yeah.
And we, well, when I lose weight, I'll do this, or when I do this, I'll get that, or I'll be better when, you know, those types of sentences are things I think come up a lot in my work. And so I wanted to flip that, and I flip that now into that conversation of identity focused goals. And one of the things that I really focus on is that I'll never achieve, it's an infinite goal, is I want to be a present, playful, and patient parent. That's my infinite, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not going to achieve it 100% of the time. I could have joined that gym and gone in it as I want to, you know, lose weight, I want to be toned, or any of those types of things, which I feel very grateful. That was never a pressure on myself from external or internal. Mm-hmm. But I went into it going, what is going to help me be that identity goal? And those are the actions that we can focus on from there.
Yeah.
And I feel like that is self-care. That is, you know, it's the real mundane actions of what am I going to do to show up for myself today? You know, one of those actions for me to be that patient, playful parent is actually to think about and to do the shopping at the start of the week. It's like so mundane. It's to know what I'm cooking every night, not to meal prep or plan it to the T, but at least know that at 5 p.m. when I've got all the kids at home, when it's chaos, I can be more present with them if I know I have things available and able to be created. So it's really mundane things. It's boring stuff. It's non-Instagrammable stuff. That I think allow us to be the, allowing us to be the person we want to be.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the more stress we add in, the more self-care we need to add in. And what do we generally do when we add more stress? We do less of the self-care. We drop the nutrition. We drop the movement. We drop the nutrition. We drop like everything that actually makes us feel who we are and helps us be the person we want to be. They're the first things to often go. And it's really hard. And I think we also need to consider the actions change, right? Like if we think about how we track movement or track food and that kind of tech culture that we've got now, it's always expected of us that that trajectory goes upwards. It's like we always do more. We need to, we did this today, then do more tomorrow, or complete the rings today. You haven't completed the rings, go for a 15-minute walk to complete the rings. You know, it's always that competitive nature to go upwards. Mm-hmm. And that expectation that we always have to be better or do more. Considering where you are right now and actually having that moment for reflection of how do I feel today? How do I feel this week? What's this week going to be like? And how can I actually change the needle on my habits to suit that? Do I need to choose more convenient food options, for example? Do I need to embrace frozen veggies? Do I need to embrace frozen leftovers in the, you know, that I've stashed away? Yeah. Or can I actually bring in more stuff? Can I, you know, I'm doing well this week. I'm feeling great. I'm in a really good place. I've got more time. I'm feeling innovative, creative. I can overcome adversity because of where I'm at right now. And that's the time where you can build new habits. You can add new things in. And often people say to me, like, you're a dietitian. Like, why are you asking me how I'm doing? It's like, well, if I'm just telling you, if I'm just prescribing, oh, well, you need to eat five times a day or whatever for whoever it is, and they can't do that, or if that doesn't suit, or if there's too many barriers in the way, then I haven't done my job properly.
Mm. Yeah. And like you said, if there's bigger picture stuff going on, you just suggesting for them to eat a little bit better today or this week is not going to actually make a huge impact if there's other things they need to work through as well.
Yeah, and food is one of those pieces, particularly for the high achievers listening, where we love control in times of, you know, uncertainty, and when you feel like that control is unraveling, we do try and gravitate and control aspects of our life that we can control. And one of those pieces is food. And so with the increase in disordered eating during this period of the last 18 months has been exponential. Mm-hmm. And there's no getting around the increase of that. So when I'm working with people, it's not just around what to eat. It's what are those emotions? What is that food? What's that reasoning behind your food decision? Because that unravels and unlocks a lot too. And so binge eating and feeling out of control with food or punishing with food or over-restricting all comes into it when we're looking at those food rules starting to become something that actually adds stress and anxiety and something we work through quite often.
Yeah, it has been so much harder for people to stick to those plans and the rules that they'd set for themselves, you know, particularly if they've been doing certain things for a long time as well. It's just been a time where, you know, often people are turning to other things for support or advice or the reward at the end of the day, you know, whether that be alcohol or chocolate or, you know, ordering in. So, yeah, an extra set of challenging times on top of everything else, just in managing that and coping.
Yeah, and that emotion that tie to food or alcohol, whatever it may be, for comfort is so human. Like, it is so human. And I think it's really important that we acknowledge that that's not bad. You're not bad for doing that. You know, if food or alcohol is your only vice, if it's your main and major kind of coping mechanism for comfort or release or numbing is a really frequent one. If I eat or if I am eating, then I have time just to numb out all the other things. That's when we need to reach out and go, okay, I need help. I need to find other ways to release, because that food isn't the problem. It's actually that we need other coping strategies around that, so that food isn't your vice. It's just a symptom of something your body needs that food is giving you in the short term, but not in the long term. You know, I was talking to a client who's Melbourne, multiple lockdowns, and they, you know, they were finding it so hard. And like, we'd worked together for months, and her first lockdown, when we first started working together, she was like really hard on herself. You know, it was a really, really tough time, and, you know, felt like she'd be going backwards, felt like she wasn't coping with any aspect of her life. And I think that's something we can, many of us can relate to at the moment. Mum, high pressure work, trying to keep up with activity, and then food on top of that was just a lot. And, you know, between lockdowns, we'd work on things to improve and add in and change and adapt and learn. But then during the next lockdown, she's like, oh, I've lost it all. I've gone backwards. You know, I feel like I've failed again. And it wasn't until the recent lockdown we had that, you know, chat. And I was like, think back to previous lockdowns. What did your survival baseline look like when it came to food? And we talked around the eating out, the convenience, the packaged food, the lack of colour, you know, all those things that she was judging herself on. I was like, well, now think about your baseline and what it is right now, and you feel like you've failed. She's like, oh, yeah, like I have included more veggies still. I'm eating out less. You know, there were improvements to her baseline nutrition, even though she felt like she'd gone backwards. So I think all those actions and all those habits that you're doing when things are better, when you're coping better, when you're thriving, if you like, when you've got space to add things in and change and adapt and improve, what you're doing is not wasting those when we revert back or relapse. I think so often when we relapse, it's seen as this failure, but in reality, you're just getting a more solid and higher foundation for that baseline, and you're building resilience. And so that expectation of always going upwards needs to come back. We need to remove that self-judgment, because it shouldn't be expected of us that we're always firing, that we're always thriving. We're human, and our behaviors and our actions and our habits and our ability to actually cope within those should change along with that.
Yeah, absolutely. What's one of the first things you'll do for yourself when you start to feel overwhelmed? And I can imagine with three little kids, business, working, you know, crazy hours at times, and you start to feel that stress and overwhelm coming in, is there something that's like your go-to that, you know, doesn't mean you need to leave the house, or you can escape for a moment, just bring yourself back?
Yeah. The things that I definitely notice are I disengage. I find myself scrolling more. Mm-hmm. I find myself being irritable at things that shouldn't make me irritable. I get like short-tempered with the kids for not their fault and all those types of things. And in those moments, you know, it happened even yesterday, like, you know, I'd added, I think I was coping, and then I had my sister's baby shower to organize, and it was just that one lump that just totally threw me over.
Yeah.
And I had such a good time organizing it. It's tomorrow and I'm feeling great now, but it was just that one thing that I just meant that I was dropping balls all over the place and judging myself in all areas. And for me personally, it's movement and being outdoors and sensing that I am, like, it's all in perspective. It just helps me gain perspective. It helps me breathe. I feel like I breathe deeper as soon as I'm in an open space or seeing ocean. You know, for me personally, that's my grounding. And that sounds really spiritual, but I don't think I've ever thought about it in that way. It's just more what I feel like I need.
Yeah.
And because I do get really touched out, I think all mums talking will understand, it can be having time just to breathe if it's possible. But, you know, I also appreciate that that's a privilege in itself at times and doesn't always happen. And so I do try and prioritize the basics and do it that way. Sorry about the dogs barking.
Okay.
And really ensure that, you know, it's a guarantee every single time.
Yeah.
It's not big things and it's not grand gestures. It's probably the best way. Or I just try and find play again. And I think kids are really nice for that perspective as well, where I just take myself less seriously. I realize it's not as big as it seems. And I just try and let myself understand that it's not, you know, I think most importantly, it happens when I'm trying to control things that aren't in control.
Yeah.
That's when I know I'm just like, oh, that's my issue here.
Yeah, kids are fantastic for, and I know people talk about it all the time, for being really present in the moment. I found myself even a few weeks ago having a couple of days off, or not fully off work, but and having moments where I wasn't on the laptop working like normal. And I think I was colouring in with my daughter and she said to me, how come you're doing it turbo, Mum? And I said, what do you mean? She said, you're doing it fast and moving on to the next one really quickly.
Turbo.
Oh, no. So I'm even trying to rush that and do that for colouring in fast and not just. So I was really, she just kind of went, hello. So good reminder there, pulled up by a five-year-old. So it forced me to slow down and actually colour in and appreciate it. And, you know, we're out the backyard in the sun and unbelievable. So they are good for that. When you have to be in the right mindset for it as well, though. It's not always possible to just go and be present and colouring and then be hands-on and whatever. It's rarely possible for me to do that. So it was really good to have a couple of days to switch off a little bit and you know,
you brought up a good point, like, of just not being possible. And it's really, and this is part of it, right? Like, how much self-judgment and shame do we put on ourselves? And, you know, I was having a Zoom call with friends over a wine, and, you know, they were just talking, like, it wasn't even anything that they were just like, oh yeah, we found a thing at the beach and then we went home and learned about that thing at the beach. And I broke down. I was like, oh my God, I'm not doing that with my kids. I don't have time. I'm trying to run a business and I haven't been to the beach with my child. And I was just like, all this like self-judgment came in and I was like, oh my God. Like, and they're like, no, Alicia, you're doing amazing. Like, stop. Yeah. But it was just that one piece of like, oh my goodness, I feel so awful. I'm failing at all areas. And like, that it just creeps in when you least expect it, doesn't it? There's no balance. It just all integrates in and it all just goes up and down at different times. And I think just accepting that it's not possible and everyone's normal or abilities are different and capacities are so different, but that's hard in itself.
Yeah.
And I think it's in our nature to always feel like we should do the best for everything and in every piece of life. And you know, every circumstance is so different. You just can't compare, but here we are comparing.
That's it all the time. What are you most excited about in your life right now?
Oh, work-wise, it's impact and change. just seeing the potential, the change in conversation, finally feeling like we've kind of gone over that big lump, because we are a tech startup, but also we're selling a very different notion when it comes to nutrition and its value in performance. It's been a really hard slog and a really long sell.
Yeah.
But now as we're seeing improve, like some incredible data, now that we're seeing a buy-in from our key stakeholders and, you know, hearing those stories and also being sought out for business, I just am so excited to see that movement and shift change. That's really exciting to me, as hard as it is. And I am positive we've chosen the hardest option when it comes to our careers. That's exciting.
Yeah, absolutely.
Personally, I'm excited for the day I can just, the simplest things, like hug my parents, head to the beach with my kids, not stressing over how busy it's going to be or whether we're doing the right thing, or, you know, those little things. I'm excited for that.
Yeah, awesome. What's something new you've learned about yourself since the pandemic hit?
I think it has to be that I can cope with so much more than I thought possible, and that I'm probably more resilient than I was before it. I remember at the start of the pandemic, it was, you know, if you remember, it's like straight after the bushfires and all those types of things as well that we had up here and then also down south as well. And my little boy said to me, he was 4 at the time, he's like, "Mum, what comes next?" And I was like, "What do you mean, honey?" He's like, "Well, we had floods. Oh, no, sorry, we had bushfires and smoke and we couldn't go outside then. And then it flooded. And then we had too many mozzies. And then we had coronavirus. Like, what comes next?" And I'm
buddy.
Sweetheart. And in his mind, it was just like always something that stopped us going outside or stopping us doing what we wanted to do or normally do. And that resilience piece, and a friend reached out to me and she's like, "Hi, I wonder if you're open to this discussion." I was like, "Yeah, sure." And she's like, "You know, you'll notice in kids that have been through so many adversities that they're actually really calm and okay with this coronavirus because it's just another thing. But for someone like your son who's had quite a safe upbringing and probably quite connected, and like this is actually a lot and he's starting to have to build upon this through adversity." Yeah. Yeah. And that word resilience, I think, is sometimes thought of as a hardness, but it's not a hardness. It's an ability to act in times of adversity. And I think, you know, if we always think about, okay, what's the strength and the speed I can act in this moment of adversity, that's the definition of resilience, and it's something we've always got to practice. So for me personally, that's something that has been a really big thing, not just in this last 18 months, but the adversities that continually happen in business and running a tech startup have been a lot.
Yeah.
And I've had to learn a lot. I was never naturally that leader. Like I was always happy just to work and do my thing. Yeah. But when no one else was innovating and no one else was, you know, making change into something that I was like, "Man, this is broken." Mm-hmm. My husband and I ended up trying to fix that thing. And so I've ended up in this position. So I've had to learn a lot and be okay with stumbling a bit, but also acknowledging that I actually can do this. Mm-hmm. I can learn this, but yeah, it's a really hard thing at the same time. So that resilience word comes up a lot.
Yeah. Well, that might lead us to your next answer, but what's something you've done that you're most proud of? Sounds like you've achieved a lot in a really short amount of time and with a hell of a lot of other things going on.
You know, I used to really judge myself on not achieving things. So, you know, the decision to go into a tech startup meant that we were removing that, you know, Australian dream of owning a home, and how I used to predict success was measured for me would be that stable projection between marriage and kids and home ownership and all those types of things. And so I've definitely defined what success or, you know, achieving actually means to me. And so for me, in the business sense, it's seeing the influence and impact I've had on the profession, the dietitian profession, in providing jobs and security and building an innovative culture.
Yeah.
And for the family, they're everything, right? Like to have a home where it is somewhere I love to be and feel safe and connected and myself in. That's definitely something I feel is my proudest thing, and hopefully it continues.
Yeah, amazing. What are you most grateful for right now in this moment?
Security, and to be in a home that is supportive, to have security around my food, all those types of things that are really small, and like just seeing how much struggle and how much adversity literally is happening everywhere. Mm-hmm. Like I was watching and really keeping on top of the food insecurity issue at the moment, and it's just so unspoken, but such a massive issue. So it's really those small things of gratitude that keep me going. And, you know, it's probably a better answer when you, you know, ask, what do I do to, you know, when I am feeling overwhelmed, it's actually taking a moment to see those really small things. Mm. And that really does help to stay focused, but also, you know, keep perspective and soldier on and actually find ways to get through it and know that you can get through it.
Yeah. Finally, Alicia, if you could offer one piece of advice to someone listening today who's going through burnout themselves, what would it be?
Show yourself some kindness and patience and self, like just absolutely self-forgiveness is one of the biggest pieces to hopefully then being able to reach out for help. And help can look differently for everyone. It can be just literally just talking. It can be dumping some other things off your plate. It can be taking some time out. But the biggest piece to let go of that shame and control that that brings, and lack of control that that brings, and, you know, the judgment that can be just this vicious cycle, is to show yourself some kindness and just notice little things, but with no pressure to change yet, even can be a really, really cool thing that you can start to just notice. And that'll be something, you know, that we use a lot in nutrition, where someone might be in this really hard space of, you know, not coping and feeling extremely disengaged and irritable and down. There won't be any pressure to change. All of it will be focused on, all you need to do is just notice. You don't need to change anything, but when you notice, you need to show yourself kindness to what you've just noticed and forgiveness. And that is all we're doing. And after we let go of some of that self-judgment and shame, it's amazing what we can actually move through, but it's almost the first step.
Mm. I love that. Thank you so much for your time today. It's been lovely chatting with you.
Thanks, Jess.
Thanks for joining us. If you're suffering from burnout or want some tips on how to avoid it, join our Facebook group, the Burnout Club Community. If you've gotten something out of today's episode, we'd love your review. Simply click the link in the show notes to share your thoughts. Until next time, go gently.